Welcome back. I was out getting the brothers who have written a fascinating book, A Mob Adjacent, A Family Memoir. You pronounce it the Italian way, or you pronounce it Gentile?
Yeah, we do.
Do you? Well, you should. What do you mean? So what? You should. That is the voice of Michael Gentile Jr. He is sitting here with his brother, Jeffrey. And they have not only written this book that is a fascinating read. They have a kind of conglomerate around this, don't you guys?
Well, we're trying to. It originally started, Mike just wanted to do the videos. I thought that the videos was a half effort. And I'd always wanted to write a book about our family. So he and I started collaborating long distance and wrote the book. Halfway through the process, Mike decided he wanted to launch a retail business, which we've done. And we've also got a thriving social media community.
Well, you can find all of it at mobadjacent.com. That's very smart, too. You go there and you get everything. I got to tell you guys, you are good for guys who are not trained writers. You're really good writers. And the other thing that really impressed me, you're pointing at your brother, Jeff. Jeff wrote it. What did you do? Just say that it wasn't on the corner of Grand and Wells. It was on the corner of Grand and I.
Well, a lot of the stories came from my experiences being mob adjacent growing up.
Yeah.
And Jeff actually he has a master's degree in English, and he was a professor at Southern Illinois, so his job is to write.
Yeah, but professors don't always know how to write. That's one of the things, I'm just telling you guys, that's one of the things that really impressed me was how,
thank you very much.
How
I appreciate
well-written
that.
The book is. Define for me, gentlemen, Gentile brothers, mob adjacent means what?
Mob adjacent means that through a fluke of geography and happenstance, our father grew
and
up...
And genetics.
Our father grew up around the next generation of post-Capone mobsters around Grand and Ogden. Mm-hmm. He grew up with the people who later went into business, very specific businesses. And we grew up mob adjacent because they were the people Dad knew.
They were the people coming to your house for coffee.
Mm-hmm.
They were the people you played with. They were the people... How did your dad... He's first generation American. Your grandparents came here from Italy.
Yes.
How did your dad not... He was close, I have to say, especially when you get to the sections of the whole... And I remember it as a kid. Mannheim Road was... I wanted you to talk a little about that thing, because there are a lot of people out there who remember that. Now it's like this whitewashed, Rosemont, the beautiful Rosemont. How did your dad manage to not get, do you think, pulled in? There must have been some opportunities, shall we say?
There were absolutely opportunities, but I think it really came down to the simple fact that Dad never wanted to work for anybody else. He only wanted to work for himself. Yeah. And he had a really strong mother who was very fearful of those people, as they were called. And between his disinclination to work for anyone else and the family influence, it was something that he just never wanted to take that step on the other side of the street.
You guys as kids didn't really become aware, this is a normal family life, right?
Rick, a lot of things changed during the course of writing the book. Two things never changed. That cover image never changed. And the first line of the book, normal is what happens every day. We had no idea that Jackie Cerrone was a criminal. We had no idea that Sam Giancana was a criminal. He was that nice man who came to Dad's bar. That was the context in which
we
knew.
If it's okay with you, and I do like the book so much, can I read a
please
portion
do.
Of it?
Please do. Very flattered.
You're right, Jeffrey. Once Michael and I, I'm considering you the co-author too, Michael. Once Michael and I started paying attention, the veneer that wrapped around our family fiction cracked, and there was no putting it back together. One day you're a kid learning to read, and this is so telling. The next, you're reading the newspaper, and there's an article about the man who came to dinner last night. Pictures, too. Yup, that's him. The newspaper said he'd been indicted for running a suburban gambling ring and looking at 5 years in prison. That's a really good way, I think, of capturing what it must have been like for you guys to say, hey, look at look at the guy in the paper. He's my...
The first time I saw a furrier, an actual store, I stood in front of the window and I was marveling at Who does this? Why would you open a store? If you want a fur coat, you call Aunt Jeanette. And then Aunt Jeanette calls her friend Millie, and Millie calls her friend Peter, whose job is to remove things from people's homes without their permission. That's how people got fur coats in my family.
One of the things, and we'll take a break, but I'm keeping you guys all the way to 11. You do a very, very nice history, too. It doesn't beat it over the head about organized crime in Chicago. Was that fun? You couldn't have known that at 12 years old. But you talk about the Black Hand, and you talk about previous generations of it. Was that fun for you guys to research that?
You know, the Black Hand part came up almost immediately because my father's good friend growing up was a doctor by the name of Frank Benevento.
Mm-hmm.
He was a foot doctor. And we were always told the story about his father, Vincent Benevento, who was the Black Hand. Now, people who don't know what that was, watch the Godfather movie.
Oh, yeah.
Godfather 2, the guy in the white suit that Robert De Niro puts the gun in his mouth and kills. That's the same character that Vincent Benevento was.
Wow.
He lived directly across the street on Aberdeen Street from my folks. And my grandpa was very wary of him. And as the story goes, you know, you read it. My grandpa helped him out of a bind. He was catching a little bit of a beating.
Yeah.
And grandpa happened to step in, and he really didn't have much choice because it was a neighbor, gave him a hand. And from that point on, I believe that's where the Gentile's Mob Adjacents actually began.
This is quite a book, Mob Adjacent, a family memoir by Jeffrey Gentile and his brother, Michael Gentile Jr. We got to take a little commercial break, then get some news, and these guys are staying all the way until 11 o'clock, and we will tell you how to get hats, T-shirts. There's a good deal you've got going on your website now. It's like buy a T-shirt and get a book with it, right?
Well, we do.
$20 or something.
$20 for a book and a T-shirt.
And a T-shirt.
Or a book and a hat.
Or book and a hat. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Christmas time in Chicago. We'll be right back. The Gentile brothers are laughing here, and there is a great deal of humor in their book, Mob Adjacent, a family memoir that started as kind of a web series, right? As kind of...
I made 10 segments of 10 stories that happened to be in the book, and we got a little bit of response, but everybody that we saw really loved them, and Jeff figured that we needed to do more.
And Jeff's the writer of the family.
Jeff's the writer, and we burned up 2 satellites by being on the phone 14 hours a day.
How long did it take you when you decided to write this book, how long was that process for you? Working, you know, across the country, you then lived in Pasadena.
Working together on the book was probably about a year. But
that's all.
I had a jump start. I had decades worth of journals and letters and stories I'd written in the past for no specific purpose. Just things that I had written down. And we started with that. I printed out everything and sent it to Michael and said, okay, where do we go next? And then we just started talking.
You know, I get the feeling, just from the talking, meeting you two, that this wasn't any kind of, like, self-therapy. This wasn't some kind of purging. This wasn't some kind of let's all...
Oh, God, no.
This seems like incredible fun for you two.
Hey, listen, how many kids, when they're 9 or 10 years old, get to see the likes of... Now, when you look at today, and you look at the time frame, Sam Giancana yelling at Frank Sinatra in your father's place. Yelling.
Yes, that's not going to happen. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, this doesn't
get
happen
out
to,
of here, you idiot.
It doesn't happen to kids or us having the ability to see people coming in and out of our lives who are, in real life, notorious.
Yeah.
But in our life, just, Mary, you got any gobble gall? Make me a sandwich to my mother.
What was your dad's place? Your dad seemed to split his life as an entrepreneur between the produce. It was all about food, the produce business and the hospitality business, right?
Here's, I think, how my dad got started. In the family, we were in the produce business, and we were up and down the alleys with horse and wagon and then trucks. After my dad's sophomore year in high school, he decided that he was smart enough. He didn't need to go to school anymore. And his father was happy about
that. That's what every sophomore thinks, though.
But in those days, it wasn't such a stigma as if
if
I would have quit high school after sophomore year. And he helped his father, and he had an older brother who How much older was Uncle Johnny than Dad?
I think he's 12 years older.
So his brother was a grown-up already when Dad was working. And he went to the Army.
Right,
and
right.
He did a lot of fun stuff while he was in the Army that allowed him to be in the hospitality business when he came home.
Gotcha.
And because he was always, and we always like to use mob adjacent as, if the mob is a swimming pool, Dad had his toes in the pool.
Yeah.
Only his toes.
Yeah. And he would get up every once in a while and go sit in a chair by the pool, too.
Absolutely.
The Air Host Motel, Orlando's Hideaway. For people who remember the strip that was Mannheim Road, you do a great job of bringing back. You were part of that whole scene, too, you guys, as kids.
It was the most exciting thing you could imagine.
It was like Vegas.
It was, yeah, Glitter Gulch is what the newspapers called it. And it was all the neon and the lights and the big hotels and the casinos and the names on the marquees that you would see on television and in the movies. It was as big time as you can get.
And you know, Dad allowed us to be the little princes.
Yeah.
We would go there and grab up a kid from the neighborhood, whoever we chose to come with us, and we would swim and we would hang out and we would see what amounted to, Rick, as a who's who in the Chicago organized crime world.
Well, and the political world, too, because it kind of crossed over in those days, didn't it? Were you guys, to get all the information, you have to order Mob Adjacent, a family memoir, which you can get with hats, T-shirts, all sorts of things, in homage to a few great movies like Goodfellas and The Godfather. Were you guys spoiled kids? Your parents seem like really decent people. They were both really attractive people, too.
Yeah, I don't think we were. So we weren't the kind of kids who got everything they wanted. We didn't get cars when we were 16 years old. And, you know, in fact, it was probably, like we write in the book, it was probably a little bit difficult for Michael when he first went to high school in Elmhurst with a lot of very wealthy kids.
Yeah.
We didn't live like that.
You know, we lived in a house, Rick, that was 3 bedrooms and 1 bath. There was 5 of us.
Remind me why you guys moved out of the city.
Well, it was time for us to be suburbanized.
Yeah. Well, that happened in that era to a lot of families. I mean,
our whole family did. My dad's, both of my dad's sisters and my dad, we all moved to Hillside and Bellwood.
Right.
And those were fine suburbs back in the 60s.
Sure.
They've changed a little bit now, but they're still fine suburbs, sure. Just different. And dad's occupation never really changed. He was kind of a go-to guy for Jack. When Jack had a place that was in trouble, they would put my dad there.
Yeah.
Dad was never arrested, never did any time.
Right.
Any time there was an outfit chart that came out, Dad's name wasn't on it. So he was clean as a whistle. He was just a guy from the neighborhood.
And he was also good at what he did.
He was great at what he did.
Yeah.
He always was great at what he did. He turned places around. I'm sure you know a place called the Casa Madrid.
Sure.
Well, when Richard Kane, in his infinite wisdom, decided to close my father up on Mannheim Road, Jack immediately put Dad into the Casa because Rocky was already 80-some years old.
Wow.
And they were robbing the heck out of him. Whew. So they put Dad in there, and Dad was there for, I don't even really know how long, but he was there for a while till he got it straightened out.
Yeah.
And then, back then, if you remember, Rick, they were opening up all these new style places. In Elmwood Park, they put a place called the Leather Bottle. It was a peanuts on the floor joint.
Oh, yeah, all modeled on the Pickle Barrel from Wells Street.
Absolutely. And then they opened up the Yorkshire Pub.
Yep.
But he, because of all the heat that was generated from the closing of Orlando's Hideaway, you know, there's a little segment in the book when the FBI knocks on the door and asks my mob adjacent mother a million questions,
yeah.
And she did great. She got an A+ while he was in the basement with us watching television. But I remember vividly that same day, Jeff and I were sitting on the steps and she was murdering him about, you got to get out of this business.
Yeah.
The neighbors, don't you think they know these guys in the shiny suits with the shiny shoes? Don't you know who they are? You're going to embarrass his family. How are your kids going to go to Catholic school if their father's locked up in jail?
What did your dad say?
Well, he didn't say much, but what he did was, Rick, he made a real power move in those days. And decided that he was going to tell Jack that he wanted to be on his own.
Yeah, I remember
that.
Well,
Jack's initial response was, sorry,
yeah,
you're too valuable of a tool for us. And then they gave him some bad jobs. Bad jobs. You know, the job at the McCormick Place was a good job.
Right.
The job after McCormick Place burned down, they were bad jobs.
Yeah.
Manual labor jobs, bringing carpet up 30 flights. Just terrible jobs.
Did your father, do you think, admire the mobsters that he knew?
I think he took them for what they were worth. I think he knew what they were through and through. I think he did his best to try and keep to himself with that life. But because of him sharing his experiences, it wound up dragging me more than Jeffrey into that life. And I was enamored by it. I got to tell you the truth. You read the book. I thought that...
Well, you were kind of a wild kid, too.
Well, you know what it was? I was a little bit wild, and if you have a...
Well, there's a section in here with your attitude. I won't read it, but it makes... it's about women and dating and...
and pizza?
Yeah. I won't... it starts, I was going out a lot in the late
70s. I know what you're talking about.
You know what, though? With the way we were brought up... We had the utmost respect because we only seen those people when they were in a respectful mode.
Yeah, when they were visiting your house and they were...
Yeah, it was context
when,
again.
When Jeff, we're taking the coats to put him on the bed and the .22 Beretta falls out onto the floor. Now, wait a minute. Our concern wasn't there was a gun.
Yeah.
It was... Which coat do we put it back into?
We're going to make a mistake.
Yeah.
We got to take a break. We got to take a break with the Gentile brothers, the authors of Mob Adjacent, a family memoir. Jeffrey and his older brother, Michael Gentile Jr. MobAdjacent.com will open your eyes to a vast array of things, including this, what do you call that thing? The movie, the, you know, the...
Documentary?
The documentary,
On YouTube.
Webisode?
Yeah, the webisode's on YouTube,
It's on YouTube. You could just go to Mob Adjacent, look for Mob Adjacent, it's on YouTube, and we'll talk about the many, the expansion of this Mob Adjacent Empire after a short commercial break. I have a few more minutes with Jeffrey Gentile and his older brother Michael Gentile Jr. and their fascinating book, Mob Adjacent, a Family Memoir, which is, you know, I know that, is this book self-published? You guys publish this, right?
It is self-published.
The thing, again, I'll say it again, and I said at the beginning of your segment, it is a remarkably well-written book.
And, thank you very
and
much.
And that goes beyond your being an English professor. Or whatever,
I appreciate
or whatever
that very
you
much.
Were. I mean, the stories are true and genuine and heartfelt, and there's a real honesty in this book, fellas, that you can feel
thank
on
you.
The page. When did you decide to make this an empire?
Halfway through the book, I only wanted to write a book. And Mike only wanted to do the videos.
Right.
I only wanted to write a book. And then when he wanted to do the retail store, I just got behind it the way he got behind the book.
Yeah.
You know, okay, you're going to, if he was going to back my gig, then I was going to back his gig.
So you've got shot glasses, T-shirts. What else have you got?
Shot glasses, T-shirts, hats.
Right, hats.
Mugs. Pens, mugs. And we're, you know, we're always adding new SKUs.
Sure.
To this, but you know, originally our goal was to get the book traditionally published. That was my goal.
The publishing business is screwed up.
We sent it to 64 agents and publishers. Of the 20 who even responded, all 20 of them said no, and one of them was vaguely insulted that I was trying to sell a book about a memoir about non-famous people. He said, "How do you expect?"
The publishing business is insane. Yeah. It is just insane.
So we decided that, all right, you don't want to publish it, we're just going to do it ourselves, and we did.
I think there's I'm sure you've thought of it too, but there's some kind of movie in here. You know?
Well, that's actually our next step.
Yeah.
I've already written the first episode of a pilot based on the 1960s portion about a man who owns a nightclub on Mannheim Road in Chicago in the 60s. That's the sitcom, and then there's also a drama that we're thinking about, an anthology telling these mob stories that are so specific to Chicago.
You know, and one of the things, you two, and you know this as well as I do, this is a mob town. This is a mob.
It's part of Chicago history.
They are giving mob tours. Show me another town that is doing mob tours with big buses filled with people going out and looking at empty lots and saying, this is where the St. Valentine's
exactly
Day Massacre.
Right. I was just going
to
say,
hey,
that
there used to be a wall over there. There used to be this over here. This used to be a hotel. There is no city on this planet more mob-centric than Chicago.
And Chicago loves their mobsters,
no
too.
Question.
Loves them.
No question. I mean,
does anybody ever say anything outside of maybe law enforcement bad about Joe Lombardo? No.
No.
Outside of law enforcement.
They never said anything bad about Harry Alleman, the most prolific hitman in the history of the mob. They don't say, look, you could go out there, you will find, I guarantee you, go out and find somebody who either is old or looks old. They will probably tell you that, they won't be this old, but I'll never forget Al Capone opened these soup kitchens and he saved my family during the Depression.
That's the truth, though.
And those were the kind of variations on that story, modern variations on that story, are the same things that were coming across our social media as other people
I don't
sharing
think there's any doubt about that. I think you guys are on to something. You, ladies and gentlemen, can read a story about these gentlemen in the next couple weeks in the Tribune, because that's what I really do for a living. But Jeffrey and Michael Gentile, it's a remarkable thing you've done. And the great thing about it for you guys, I have a younger brother too, you guys have obviously gotten closer and gained a greater understanding of yourselves and where you're from by doing this book.
I think so too.
I think so too.
And try to put a price on that.
Yeah. That's priceless.
Yeah. Now, you live here now.
I've been here forever. I never left the
same
city.
Here.
I live in the western suburbs now. I'm in Lyle, and I've been there for the last 15 years.
How many grandkids do you have?
I have 13. I have one on the way, and I have a great-granddaughter in Florida.
Wow.
My children were overachievers. They've been fruitful and multiplied. But there's not a time that when we did this that doing it for money really ever came into effect. This was something that Jeff wanted his daughter and his granddaughter to be able to read in 20 years, and I wanted my group to be able to read it. And it's morphed into something, hopefully, God willing, a little bit more than that.
See, that's what, you know, I always believe that success, meaning success and money, comes from passion. You can't sit there and plan to make money off something.
Oh, and we're very passionate.
You're doing this out of passion, and it shows in the way you talk, the way you smile. And just be there for the photo on Tuesday, gentlemen. I thank you so much for getting in touch, because it's really it brought back a lot of memories for me. I was kind of a kid, but I remember Manheim Road. Holy, it was kind of a kid wishing, oh man, I can't wait till I'm 21.
And then it was gone.
That's what that street did to me. Oh man, I can't wait till I'm 21. And then, like, where is it? It turned into good old, you know.
It's nothing now.
It's chain motels.
And a casino, and who cares?
It's nothing
there,
now.
Yeah, I know you could gamble. See, the other thing is, I knew you could gamble out there somewhere. You didn't need a casino. You could gamble in the back room of every place. Gentlemen, it's a pleasure to meet you. I will be in touch.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.